Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sangham namasami. The question is about how to manage unruly thoughts during a meditation. Does anybody else have this experience? Unruly thoughts. The path is just like the highways are made with asphalt. And it takes a long time to put that stuff down and smooth it out. So we're just working away at it. The road may be long, and the process of smoothing out the way is painstaking sometimes. And then we learn about restlessness, and we learn that thinking is not the way, because we want the space behind or beyond the thoughts. We want the peace beyond thinking. And to realize that, to notice that, we really just need to glance beyond thinking, beyond thoughts, and know the emptiness that is already there, the peace that is already there. But as soon as we grasp an object, even if it's thoughts, we get caught up with it. And there's an arising of not liking something. But if we can bring the mind back without having to bring it back compellingly, like I have to bring these thoughts that I am thinking back to somewhere, present moment, that's a technique. But in the moment of not doing anything and just witnessing thought and seeing it for what it is, there's a teaching in that. We see that it's impermanent. And if the mind looks to the impermanence rather than to the object that is impermanent, then we're already in a space that is not caught up with the object. And the whole practice is not to develop a technique and succeed as a person doing a technique, but to step away from technique, step away from identifying as a person, and just know the process, see the process of, it's like when you sit, if you sit under one of our roofs now, you'll see the snow dripping down, drip, drip, drip. But we don't get caught up with every little drip. We just see the cause of the dripping, the action of it, the whole thing. And then we can rest in bearing witness to that and knowing that. No, I'm dripping here. I'm thinking here. It's a habit. And habits are very difficult to let go of, as we can see. And actually, we have a lot of trust in our thoughts. We like thinking. We've been thinking since we were very little. And so the habitual thinking is a hindrance. It's an obstacle, it's a filter. But it's only an obstacle if we resist, if there's an idea of what should be happening. I should be centering, I shouldn't be thinking, I should be practicing a technique, I shouldn't be doing this. And then there's the I, the object, the resistance to it, and there's dukkha. We know we're restlessly caught up with thought, but we can see that there's no one who is restless. There's just the identification, the belief, it's an idea that we have to do something and we have to do it a certain way, otherwise we're not going to have a good result. But stepping back from the whole process and just being present, just being, not even being, just emptying out, no concept, because the thinking takes a little bit of energy to actually think about it. You put your energy there. But if we go to the silence behind the thinking, or the silence that is between every thought, then there's a greater energy that is looking at the fabric of the habit. When we're sewing or knitting or carpentry or some skill with the hand, then we pay attention at first just to the yarn and the needles and the pattern. But at a certain point, it does itself automatically, and one gets into a zone where your hands are just doing it and there's present moment awareness. Because you have a skill, and when you develop the skill, you feel confident. So when we develop a skill of pure awareness, then we don't get caught up with the thoughts as much. We just let them drip. We don't worry about where they're landing or that they're even coming. They could be going fast or slow, and we don't care so much because we're not thinking into the future of succeeding in a certain technique whereby there won't be any thoughts. We already have a concept of what we're supposed to do, rather than just being present in the silence to see the drip drip of every moment, present moment awareness that feeds that particular love, openness, entry into what is. And it doesn't bother us. Oh yeah, there goes that mental element is fixating on thoughts. But there's an awareness of that. So if you pull back into knowing that there's restlessness, it's almost like by knowing it, there isn't restlessness anymore because we are not the object of our awareness. We think that we're the body, that we are our thoughts, or we're the contents of consciousness. But that's not what we are. What we are, what we truly are, the truth of what we are, is not impermanent. But whatever is arising and ceasing in consciousness is impermanent. So that's how we wake up to the truth of this present moment. And we stitch every moment of truth to every moment of truth through this awareness. It's constantly there. Even when we're asleep, but we may not be conscious, but that silence is still within us. We wake up to it. Oh, we wake up. We wake up every day. But we thought we weren't awake. But as soon as we're aware that we're awake, there's a moment of being awake, truly awake. But it doesn't last. Then we get fascinated by objects. The fascination with thoughts and the fascination with objects being a certain way and thoughts being a certain way, we want those thoughts to stop. So there's wanting. But if we let go orchestrating the drama of the moment, then there is no problem. So we're not making anything. It's just stitching itself. And we're just aware of that. So what is right effort? It's about non-attachment, about letting go, about non-judgment. If I tell you right effort is you should do this, that, there's a you and there's something you have to do and there's a formula, and then you try to align yourself with a formula. But then we easily can get caught up in concepts. This being has to do this according to that. But we have a certain strength, the ability to pay attention and let go the concepts and try to be present. Our opinions are going to get in the way, because again, the thinking mind is evaluating what we're doing. Oh, I had a bad meditation. But even the willingness to sit and listen to the silence is a wonderful effort. And if we have a certain definition of effort, and then we try to align ourselves with that concept, then we might get really hung up and tie a lot of knots. I know for years, if somebody asked me that, I would give you a list of qualities of right effort. There are four right efforts. So to abandon what is unwholesome and to cultivate what is wholesome, and whatever is unwholesome that hasn't come yet, to prevent it, and whatever wholesome has not arisen yet, cultivate that. And those are nice ideas. But behind all that, there's a certain way of being with our experience, to know the results, know that the good taste, the beautiful feeling in the heart comes when we're able to look at a flower and just have the joy of seeing that flower blooming. That's a moment of stopping with something that is very, very pure and pleasing to the eye. It's a moment of joy. And this practice is fueled by joy. And joy of heart comes from living a life that is based in kindness, in moral purity, in peace of heart. So if we criticize our practice, we won't feel very good about it. It might be hard to motivate ourselves to the next sitting. So it's good to rejoice in our effort instead of judging our effort, and to see if the effort was consistent. And if it wasn't, we know that, but we don't have to judge so much. We just keep walking the path and we get to know how we walk. Just like if you're a bad driver, you might be not on the right side of the road very much, and you know that's dangerous. So you do your best effort to stay in your lane. You just stick to the part of the lane where you know it's safe. And that's easy to manage and keep it so simple and not judge it. Well, I made it from A to Z or A to B. It's not like a competition. You arrived safely. You didn't hurt yourself. You spread some loving kindness. You feel a greater peace in your heart, even if it's for a moment. This is good, and you keep doing that. If it doesn't feel good, then you could see again. But the judging mind is not helpful. Just to see what is the result of judgment and what is the result of identifying with the person that you think is not doing a good meditation. And then we can get attached to our ideas. Well, I'm not a good meditator. And then you start from a low point, being the person. But if we just revive and resuscitate our gratitude for a moment of peace and a moment of being present. Because otherwise we're running around distracted with our duties, our activities, our intentional thoughts. But to go to the silence and to stop and pay homage to the present moment, this is very beautiful in itself. It's so valuable. Treasure your intention to meditate moment by moment, rather than immediately evaluating and wishing it were better or worse. It's just what it is. We're on our way to visit someone, and the road is very long, and we're impatient to get there. And if we're impatient to get there, we miss the whole journey. The point is not so much the getting, but it's the walking that journey. That's how we learn not to get somewhere, but to be where we are, totally. Because there's nowhere to get. There is nothing to get. There's just pure presence here and now. And the more pure that presence is, that's it. There's no need to do a work of meditation, because that's a concept. Whereas just to be present and to receive the joy, patient, even if you have to endure some painful feeling in the body, eventually our gratitude for having a body and being able to do as much as we can do is enough to nurture gratitude, loving kindness, and appreciation for all the beautiful beings we know and love. That we breathe, we can still breathe. We can serve. We can digest our food. We have food to eat. We have clothing. There's so much blessing in our life. Just by reflecting with gratitude, the mind, the heart, overflow with pure presence. So we can meditate on a feeling of gratitude. We can meditate on loving kindness. We can meditate on pure presence. We can meditate on the ability to know one moment of mindfulness. No thinking. One moment. Because the world doesn't do that. The world is grabbing, is destroying the peace. There's always some program going on. There's always activity. There are motivational speakers. You can listen to them all night, every night, for years, and you would never get through it all. But it's so interesting. Really? It's garbage. Because it's just information that fills up our citta, the mind. We won't even remember it. In a year, what good will it do us? When we're sick in bed, what will that do? When our best friend gets cancer, when we get cancer, when we're on our deathbed, what good will all those speakers do? But the voice here within us is pure presence, ever transcending. No one there to die. Just consciousness arising and ceasing, arising and ceasing. But the awareness of that conscious knowing in our heart is ever present. It never ceases. Even when the body is complete, and then we might re-arise in another form, there the awareness appears again, unless it's totally purified. Just what we have is enough. As long as the critical mind doesn't sneak in and destroy it with thinking. It gives us courage. It gives us endurance and strength to stay with our journey, which takes patience, it takes joy, it takes attention in the present moment, it takes a whole lot of mindfulness, a whole lot of kindfulness, a whole lot of lovingness, a whole lot of emptiness, emptying out. It's almost like we have to unlearn everything that we learned and come to the blank screen, blank, like nothing. To know the nothing of this moment. And the mind is pure, pure silence, but it's totally attentive and present for that. And then we can know the transcendent purity that is there. So let's pay homage. We're human. Human, woman, whatever you want to call it. It's not a gender, it's just a composite of elements. And homage has human in it. Homo sapien, homage, human and goodness, human godness. That's what I think of homage. It's trust, to trust the truth of what we are, but we don't know what that is. So I totally trust that the Buddha was enlightened, that he was fully awake. I trust his instructions. I trust his awakening. So I'm wearing this robe. I've been dressed like this for 37 years and on this path for a lot longer than that. So to me, that's refuge. And I trust that that awakening is possible for this being, for beings. So many beings that I follow who have done this, who have walked this way, who have realized the truth of what they are, and who transmit, they become transmitters. So if we don't trust this, do you trust your car when you get into it every day? You drive down the highway at very fast speed. If you get off that road for a second, you'd be dead or badly injured. So if I'm not on this path with both feet, whole mind, body, consciousness, total refuge, I'm going to crash into the world, into what the world is promising. And it's a killer because it's an entrapment. It easily takes us off the path. We get sidetracked immediately. And we believe in what we're doing. But then we lose our refuge, and we can lose it so fast. So for me, refuge is coming back every day to the robe, the bowl, my Sangha here, the ancient Sangha, the Buddha, the Dhamma that he taught, and those who practice. Whatever little chant that I remember, it's good enough. But when I was young, I was memorizing. I wanted to know everything by heart. And now I realize the more simple, the less that I stuff into the brain, and the more I know just in present moment awareness, the more refuge becomes just the present moment. It's not something outside of me, because the Dhamma is here. It just becomes baked in more and more that we practice. So we don't look for refuge in other people or in other things or in ideas or in occupations or in techniques. But we trust what we can develop within us. And the more we trust that, the more it arises. It's like we draw it out. It's just wondrous how that is possible. And we're alive. So because we're alive, we have the ability to do this. If we're not alive, it isn't going to happen. So the older I get, the more excited to just breathe and be present, not worry, not fret, just be. So that's refuge. That's why I like bowing. I like being in front of shrines, because it's always a mirror. This is how I take refuge. It's like looking at the photograph of your beloved. Even if your beloved is dead, when you look at their picture, you feel a certain uplift in your heart. You remember the goodness, and it inspires you. It's an energy that it is effortless. It's not effort power. It's not through striving, but it's wisdom power. It's the power of the heart that knows the truth within, that we can only draw the truth out of this. You can't draw the truth out of the air. You draw it out of your own essential nature, which is the knowing, the present moment, awareness of things, of life, of truth, as it manifests. And it manifests through unconditioned love in awareness.
Nanamayam Dhammakaya Sadhu Karam Dhamma Se.